Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
Hey everybody, Mark here. Welcome to our very first mailbag episode. Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is...
Nevermind the Music!
Yes! The first mailbag episode of season 1 of Nevermind the Music.
Yeah, we're a little bit out of practice, Mark. We haven't, talked on mic for a while. I've just been listening to you on the podcast.
And vice versa. And also guesting on Lorehounds podcast and Geekscape podcast and all sorts
of
other...
It's been really fun. I think that we're famous now, so we've really propelled...
We're internet famous, at least.
Something.
This has been fun, though, and this is going to be a fun episode to record because we have some listener feedback to read through and talk about and even listen to in one case.
Yeah.
This is all from emails people sent in or also... discussion and questions on the Lorehounds Discord server.
Yeah, you should check out the Discord server. I was new to Discord at the start of this process, but found it to be a really rich community and a lot of really good dialogues happen in real time there as our episodes are broadcast or published or whatever. There's been a lot of great back and forth. So check that out if you haven't.
And the lorehounds.com has a link to the Discord server if you'd like to join.
And there's a lot of great shows on that network, too. So if you're nerds like us, come and find your people over on Discord. Do you want to get to some of these questions, Mark?
Well, I'll just say, people, if you want in on the next one, you can also just send us an email. nevermusicpod@gmail.com. We'll do one of these. Probably will be 3 months from now. We'll do another one. So build up those emails. Tell us how we're right, how we're wrong. Yeah, start us off with an email.
Sure. So we have an email from Allie P. Hi, Mark and Nicole. I just discovered the pod through the Lorehounds, and I'm loving the insight and knowledge you impart about music. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about songs used in TikTok trends. I find that a lot of them make their way into my daily life, and I often find myself listening to them on repeat, particularly That's So True by Gracie Abrams. I find that song and the bridge specifically just totally scratched something in my brain. I'm 1000% hooked on the podcast and can't wait to hear what you cover next. And I can't wait for the Taylor Swift episode you promised. Kind regards, Allie. Yes, please, Allie. I support everything that you're mentioning here.
Did we promise a Taylor Swift episode?
I've been promising it to people just in real life. When we first started recording this podcast, we kind of had a rule that we weren't going to discuss artists that had really intense fandoms because we didn't want to claim that we were experts on any specific artist, but we're learning. It's really hard to talk about things and not talk about Taylor Swift. Like when we talked about Outkast double album, we said that there were no other double albums that were really that prolific. And,
everybody started telling us, you're wrong. What about Taylor's double album?
And then we were like, but we said we weren't going to talk about Taylor Swift. So we will. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we'll do a Taylor episode.
I do love this Gracie Abrams song. Gracie Abrams is Taylor adjacent. She opened for Taylor on her Eras tour. And then also... they have a song together that's a collab. I know that she's Taylor adjacent because she just announced tour dates in Boston and I tried to get tickets. They sold out in 2 minutes and now are on secondary market for $1,000 for a balcony seat. So that is the Taylor Swift effect. That's So True is a great song, notwithstanding the TikTok trends. But a lot of songs have been really like coming up on TikTok that are working their way back in the lexicon. I just heard my daughter singing that Cranberries song, Let It Linger, Linger.
Yeah.
She was like singing it in the shower. I'm like, what are you
Rest
doing?
In peace, Dolores.
And she's like, oh, yeah, the song from TikTok. I was like, what? So she's like,
the new hit single from 1994 or whatever.
But some of these songs are total earworms. And I kind of like it. But they do get stuck in your head.
This song specifically is very cool.
Yeah.
And Taylor adjacent is the correct way to describe it. But if I can just never mind the music cue for a second, Allie, why is it so cool? I think it's the syncopation.
Mm.
There's this guitar part that's got this da, da, ta, da, da. And then you mentioned the bridge, the drums. It does this da, 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 da. And there's just the groove of it. I was just yelling at my songwriting class a few weeks ago because in my songwriting class, we write a song together in class based on a certain parameter.
Mm.
And I was like, why is nobody putting any syncopation? Syncopation is when things are offbeat. And if it's not, it doesn't dance. And that song really has an infectious groove because of that.
And I also think that TikTok songs, they just shorten a song to like 30 seconds to a minute, maybe. So you don't have to digest a whole song. You can just get caught up in the hook of it because that's what's broadcast on TikTok. And I love the term earworm. It's something that's kind of working into our lexicon. I've never heard it more than I have in the past month or two. I just read this research study. These scientists made a track that you can play when you have a song stuck in your head that will like erase it. And it's like this really cool mixed up track of all these different songs to kind of like reset your brain.
Oh, wow.
For earworms. Yeah. So.
But when we're talking about TikTok, we're not talking about the character from the creepy 1980s movie Return to Oz.
No.
The robotic.
We're
talking about the app. Okay. Yeah. I don't use TikTok and my kids don't use TikTok.
I've been told that Nevermind the Music has a TikTok account.
Do we have a TikTok account?
I don't
know.
I didn't set that up.
Okay.
We should probably
We do have a TikTok.
Yeah. They're like, you never post.
Micro content for it is the problem.
I don't know how to do stuff like that. I'm old.
All right. We'll get there.
Okay. Thanks
Listeners,
for your question, Allie.
Let us know how we should best be using TikTok. All right. I'll read the next one. This is an email from Josh P. Not the only Josh to join us today. Hey, guys. Just started listening to the covers episode, and it got me thinking about covers. Well,
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Not anecdotally, parenthetically. I kind of feel like covers are good when they tweak the song a little or outright flip it on its head. Of course, I have not 1 ounce of musical talent, nor do I understand the technical aspects or theory of music. I'm going to pause there. He goes on, but I want to pause there. Covers, when they tweak the song or flip it, like, do you prefer, listeners, you heard some of our favorite covers.
Yeah.
Do you prefer one that really does something crazy or one that tweak? Because it sounds like Josh is preferring the more significant changes.
I like a cover when it's an iteration of the original song, that's taking the original song and changing it in a way that makes the song not better, but just different. So I like a more drastic thing. I don't want just a tweak.
I agree. And I say this knowing that I'm in a band that plays covers pretty close to the original because we're trying to just fill time in a set sometimes if we got to play a 3-hour gig.
So but GB band.
GB band stuff. Thank you. Nice memory there. Nice reference to an earlier, not that long ago episode.
No,
though.
That's what I remember.
So I think the weird, really far change on a cover, though, it still has to be true to what we like about the song. Mm. That's the thing. Is if there's a song that has really good melody in the bridge, probably don't change the melody in the bridge. That's the one thing. Like, do your job to make it your own, but I want to remember why I like the song.
Right.
So Josh goes on. Anyway, my favorite cover is Typo Negative's cover of Summer Breeze. I found it on the I Know What You Did Last Summer soundtrack. That takes me back. That soundtrack actually has two more covers that I think are pretty good. Coolest Shaker, that also takes me back, does a cover of Hush, and Toad the Red Sprocket also takes me way back, covers Hey Bulldog, underrated Beatles song.
Underrated?
Underrated.
You think?
It's kind of forgotten, right?
It's one of my favorites.
I know. It's underrated.
Oh, I get it.
How many people talk about Hey Bulldog? People talk about the Yellow Submarine EP plus soundtrack album?
I mean, you and I are. Josh P is.
Right now. That's right. Yeah. That's all. Love the pod, Josh. Okay. I take this opportunity to also, especially on the Discord, people were just listing covers they loved.
So I forgot a lot of covers.
We forgot a lot, and that's
so
perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So Rocky Zim says Silverstein's Apologize, which is one Republic tune. Woe is Me, TGIF, Katy Perry tune. Alicia says Brown Derby's Romeo and Juliet. That's the Dire Straits tune. Davey Mack says Charlotte Gainsbourg, Runaway, Kanye West. And The Clash, I Fought the Law, Bobby Fuller 4 original. The Donnas, Dancing With Myself, that's a Billy Idol original. Ghost of Perdition calls out Pantera's Planet Caravan, which is Black Sabbath. Eon points out Sonic Youth Superstar, The Carpenters. Nerves, Hang on the Telephone, Blondie. And last but not least, Two Kids, Two Dogs. I think that's how to pronounce that. Two Kids, Two Digs, there's no vowels. Rufus Wainwright's version of Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen.
Which I think is better than the original.
I mean, I like
Rufus Wainwright a lot. I like the tone.
Rufus Wainwright is really good. I feel like there's been podcasts about how all the covers of Hallelujah have kind of risen above the original of Hallelujah.
Yeah, it's a great song. Okay,
thanks, everybody, for the suggestions. And thanks, Josh, for the write-in.
Okay, next question. Ghost of Perdition and others on Discord ask, when people ask what genre of music I like, I usually just say all of them, except country, though I don't completely dislike Garth Brooks, though that might just be because my mother listened to him sometimes when I was a kid. Mark, yeah. If I asked you what kind of music do you like, what would you say?
Yeah, that's not, Ghost of Perdition isn't specifically asking us, but I think that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
It's like, and what do you do with these people who say, oh, I like all kinds of music? What do you think of that? My answer, I usually say my first love was rock music.
Sure.
That's kind of how I answer it, but I'm also into, and then I list off a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
How about you?
I usually just say I like good music. That's how I answer the question.
So you're
question.
One of those people not answering the question,
I'm
right?
I'm not. No, I'll say I like, I mean, if you've listened to the pod, you know, like I typically lean more towards lyrics. So if something has like profound lyrics, that's something
that's why you're into the singer-songwriter. Why are you into the jam band stuff then, if that's
just
true?
Because it was fun to
just vibe. When you're in certain
and the community
scene. Right.
Around those, that kind of music.
So I think I have to say I've, so many times in my life, I've heard someone say, I like everything except for country.
I like country.
And it's just, it wore, and I'm not harping on you, Ghost, if that is your first name. Perdition.
Mr. Perdition.
Ghost of, Mr. Ghost of, Miss Ghost
Mr.
of.
Mr. of Perdition.
But that was like the line. Or like back in when I was in high school, it'd be like, I like everything except for hip hop and, oh no, they would say, except for rap and country, right? That was like what the rock guy would say. And like, I don't know, there's just so much good country.
And I'll challenge Mr. of Partition in saying, you know, you like everything at Garth Brooks because your mom, like, what if we said to you, you can never listen, you have to trade all of whatever you like. I'm going to stereotype your name to think of the, you like rock music, right? What if I said,
it sounds like a heavy metal band,
right?
Name.
Yeah. Like, what if you couldn't listen to Black Sabbath ever again? But you could still listen to Garth Brooks. Would you take that trade because it reminds you of your mom? Like, would you take that trade? I'm wondering if our emotional connection outweighs how much we like or dislike the music. Do you know what I'm, am I making sense?
You're saying like years later, if of Partition's mother were to pass,
yeah,
would you rather hear the song to remember her than but never hear one of your favorite bands again?
Yeah.
I think
it's dark.
I think that's dark. I think I would still take the music that I like because I have positive emotional memories with that too.
Yeah. All right.
But to this, like, I actually push back. You know, of course, I teach music, and oftentimes the icebreaker the first day of class will be something like, what kind of music are you into? Sometimes I'll do the weird stuff like, what's your guilty pleasure?
Yeah, like the guilty pleasure music.
What's the last thing you heard in your car? Please be honest. Or on the T on your phone. But I get a lot of, I listen to everything. And with musicians, I push back on that.
Yeah.
What are you actually... Because I pretty much do legitimately like everything.
Yeah.
But I don't actually listen to everything. Not anymore.
What's your guilty pleasure music?
There's certain kinds of dance pop that I know is probably not very good. You know, like there's certain like mid-2000s Black Eyed Peas or whatever that
sure.
I love that stuff. And it's not very good.
No.
But I like it. I'm sure there's better answers there. But like... Just the idea, I do push back, especially with people that are trying to be musicians. What do you mean when you say you like everything? Because there's like a certain, again, especially when you're trying to become a performer or a songwriter or whatever, like have something that you think, have something you believe in. Like, which one do you like more? Like, how are you going to, you can't be influenced by everything at all times, right? Yeah, I mean, I think I appreciate everything, but that doesn't mean I listen to everything, you know? Anyways, thanks for the comments. Am I the next one? I'm the next one. Oh, say, this is another comment on Discord from Two Kids, Two Dogs. Oh, boy. All right. You get to be disagreed with first. I get to be disagreed with later.
Nice.
Thank you for such an entertaining and educating podcast. Although I, capital letters, totally disagree with your take on Paul McCartney. And capital letters. Obviously, my favorite Beatles. Parenthetically, I think Two Kids, Two Dogs is referring to your take on Paul McCartney.
There was, one day and I said I didn't like Paul McCartney's voice and I'm getting flack.
All right, they go on.
Yeah.
His voice on Maybe I'm Amazed has given me chills since the day I first heard it. The first time being when Wings Over America was released. So I'm talking about the live version and giving you a hint of how old I am. All the love he feels for Linda and his amazement at their love is expressed not just through the lyrics, but through his voice. Sigh. See, goosebumps again. Also loved your own music. Really enjoyed listening to that pod in particular.
Oh, Mark.
Do they mean my music?
Yeah, I think so.
I hope that means it's not just the ad music. Yeah, Paul McCartney, this has been litigated, I'm sure, elsewhere. You're wrong. That's okay. You can grow.
I can grow. Thank you for pointing out my flaws.
Someone else calls one of my favorite songs something nasty later, so...
I can't wait.
All right.
Okay,
Thank you, Two Kids, Two Dogs.
And also, Two Kids, Two Dogs, thanks for your engagement on Discord. You've been really fun to talk to, so way to go.
For sure.
An email from Josh C. Hi, Mark and Nicole. Listening to the episode so far, I noticed that I have a connection to the most of the music you talk about as it comes from the 90s, 2000s, when I was in high school, college. Same. Clearly, this is the best music. But talking to a teacher friend recently, she mentioned that so many of her musical references don't land with her middle school students, since they, of course, have new musical touchstones. In your classes, do you try to update your references to stay with what is current or use what comes naturally in referencing things that happened 20 plus years ago? If you are staying current, how do you do so? Picking up from your kids' copious amounts of time on YouTube? Love the podcast and looking forward to more musical-based memories on whatever you are talking about next. So our answers are going to be different here because you teach music and I don't.
Right.
Right? So it makes sense that you are staying relevant with what's happening in music. I teach psychology. I don't need to stay relevant with current trends. And I have noticed, I've been teaching about like almost 15 years, which is wild. I'm older now. It's clear, right? There's no getting around the fact that I was my students' age when they were born. Like when my students were born, I was a freshman in college. So there's less and less we can connect on and talk about. So how I deal with it is I don't try to connect with them. If anything, I age myself up and put them in the power position when talking about cultural references. So I'll say like, hey, can you, even though I know who Chapel Rowan is, I'll say like, hey, who's this Chapel Rowan? Like, can you tell me about her and what their vibe is? Or I kind of make jokes like, you know, when I was born in the 1900s, we didn't have TikTok. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And I think that working towards that angle has helped me. But I'm curious to what you think, because you teach things that are more part of the zeitgeist than me.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. So I think one thing about my educational sort of situation is that it has to be reciprocal.
Mm.
Like, my students keep me hip, but I have to get them up to speed on some stuff they don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the canon, like, you must know the Beatles or Beethoven or whatever, but just there's just so much good music.
Mm.
I owe them sharing a lot of it with them, but also I need them to get me back up to speed. So honestly, like, it's almost so, because like, music majors can't be trusted, because music majors are, we've probably talked about this in the podcast and other times, but they're music snobs, right? And if I say what's cool now, none of them are going to say Charlie XCX.
Sure.
Some of them might like it, but they're not going to say that.
They'll say something more like a deep cut to impress you that they know it, or to have clout or something.
Or they legitimately like the weird indie underground hip hop or electronic experimental jazz or whatever. They're not necessarily the pulse for what's pop. Now, some of my favorite, I'll say like favorite artists post 2010 or whatever, like meaning me now being a full adult who's no longer like young anymore.
Mm.
Like, I owe a lot of knowing who those people are because of these music majors, because they legitimately, look, they're the music snobs of their day. I can relate to that. And
yeah.
So I want to know what band or what singer-songwriter they know about. And I will then go follow that person and learn about them. But to really know the zeitgeist, it's my gen ed classes.
Sure.
So like, I have these online gen ed classes. I've talked about this stuff before, and, you know, them using their AI to answer their assignments and all that. But I'll do questions where it's a discussion post where they're supposed to share a link to a song they think has a cool melody. And like, I will, or for example, right, I will hear of the next big artist first in that venue.
Yeah.
And then 3 months later, I start hearing about whatever being nominated for Best New Artist. It's some random business major who isn't being pretentious, but who's also like, or like Silk Sonic, you know, that collab with Bruno. First heard about it there. This Is America by Childish Gambino. I knew Childish Gambino. I hadn't seen that video yet.
Yeah.
First posted on the discussion topic for political music in my rock history class.
Cool.
Like, so it's especially me learning from my students happens almost mostly through the non-majors, because they're the ones who don't feel like they have to show off and their taste is a little more normal.
Do you ever get the question, oh, professor, have you ever heard of this band called Pink Floyd? Was someone said that to me once. Or, oh, professor, have you ever heard of Oasis? They're like this old, like, British band. I'm like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, so
like, yes, sir,
the whole I just have discovered this thing.
Yeah, it's cute.
I don't, because they assume I've heard of it. And so I sometimes will have the opposite problem where they'll be like, oh, my God, this is like that, the seventh Black Sabbath album, da 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 da. And I either, depending on how tired and my level of dignity, I'll either be honest, be like, I actually don't know that album, or I'll smile and nod.
Yeah.
They assume I know the thing and that there's no way they know it without me knowing
and
it.
And then I'm shocked at how much they don't know. Like, this girl had a Sublime, like a 40 Ounce to Freedom Sun, like the album cover Sun. She had like a hoodie on. And I was like, oh, cool, like Sublime, I love them. And she's like, what? I was like, yeah, it's a band. She's like, oh, no, I just thought it was like a cool sun and it's important to like,
you
Sublime.
Say that, but one of those moments where like, I'm thinking about my brother and then my brother sends me a text a minute later, whatever. My brother never sends me a text. Shout out. He's not listening. So probably not. One of these moments in the universe, I was saying that exact same thing, because one of my students in one of my classes just a couple months ago was wearing like a Pink Floyd shirt or something like that. And I was like, oh, do you actually know Pink Floyd, or is it just cool? And she's like, yeah, I know. And everybody laughed about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I bet you see those people walking around with the Sublime Sun from 40 Ounce? I said that exact thing.
Wow,
and they've
Mark.
Never heard Sublime. And I
Ew.
Kid you not, somebody walked in the room. I swear, this is perfect synergy in the universe. 3 minutes later, one of my students, who's a very good musician, a jazz musician,
okay,
walks in the room, with the 40 Ounce to Freedom Sun. And I'm like, oh, you a big fan of 40 Ounce? And he's like, what? Oh! And the whole class just burst out laughing.
That poor kid probably has such anxiety.
I felt bad. And I went to him later.
He's still losing sleep
about
that.
Because he's still doesn't probably, he didn't understand in that moment, why is everybody laughing at me?
And then he didn't come to class for 2 weeks.
Shout out to you. I just wrote you a letter of recommendation. You're
great.
Not listening to this podcast.
We believe in you, buddy.
You're fine. You're going to be fine. What I had to talk to him was like, just so you know, you were the most perfect sacrifice for the best joke of all time.
Well, I hope he's not like...
And he got it at Hot Topic or whatever. Yeah. And he hadn't heard it.
They don't know. So it's our job to teach the people.
But I think to Josh C's question, and thank you, Josh, like, for me, it's a balance. Like, I have to bring them in and I have to bring my... Because my job is to kind of teach them the stuff they should know in the world. And I think it's part of my mission to make sure that's not frickin' white supremacist like it's been for the last 100
right.
years.
And same in psychology. And I think that our fields are so different. Like, for me, those moments happen when I'm trying to build rapport with my students and, like, a before-class banter.
Oh, yeah.
But for you, it's, like, part of the curriculum.
Part of the curriculum.
So it's we're coming at it from different angles, and it's easier for me just to be like, oh, I don't know, like, I'm an old granny, like, I'm gonna go.
We have to play that role a little bit.
Yeah, and you play a character.
And I used to be able to make like a Harry Potter reference to connect, and now it's like,
buddy.
Well, that's old.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That's, we were like barely of that age, and like, so my millennial students, there aren't millennial students anymore, or if they are, they're the old person in the class because they're 30 something.
No,
you know?
I usually say, like, when I make a joke and it doesn't land, I'll just say there's less and less that we can talk about, guys.
Yikes.
Let's just get back on
topic. It's true. And I also have the extra advantage in that a lot of the cultural references that I'm bringing in are even before my time. Like, to say nothing of talking about Brahms or whatever, but like, hey guys, have you heard this Beatles song or this Fleetwood Mac song? That's not, they can't look and go, oh, look at the old man. It's like, this is old for me.
Yeah.
I didn't exist when this came out.
So there was a similar question again from Two Kids, Two Dogs. I'm totally enjoying your pod, but that song you said was the best song ever, Mark. Noise. Agreed. Which leads me to the question, what makes me hate a song and someone else love it? Is it brain receptors? Is it culture? What could it be?
And I put this in, even though we've already heard from Two Kids, it's related to Josh's question, but also I got a major diss in that, and it's only fair because they were mad at you about Paul McCartney. So talking about Jimmy Eat World, by the way, for me, this is heaven, possibly the greatest song of all time. What do you got on this question?
So there is, I actually heard this question and I wanted to recommend a book that answers it better than I could, by a psychologist named Oliver Sacks. It's called Musicology, I think. And it talks about like why we like and dislike certain music and how we feel a connection to certain type of music. So he talks a lot about brain science in relation to like the why we absorb the type of music we absorb. But I think a lot of it is culture, and I think a lot of it is, don't take this the wrong way, Mark, but the relationship to the person we have that's recommending it. Like, if someone recommends, like, I know that you and I were very similar. We're friends. We have been for a long time. We have different tastes in music. So I know coming in, I'm primed for whatever song you think is going to be the best song of all time, depending on my mood that day, how I'm feeling around you that day. I'm going to like it or not like it just based on my relationship to you. Right. Not to say that that was the vibe with Jimmy Eat World, but you could listen to that podcast. I was cranky on that podcast.
Yeah.
I was just in a bad mood. I wasn't going to like anything. You could say that, you know, Taylor Swift's Betty is the best song ever made. And I'd be like, F you, Mark, when it probably might be. Right.
Huh.
So I think that like our bias has a lot to do with what we like and what we don't like. It's hard for me to like country music if I've always said, oh, I don't like country music. It's hard for me to like accept that I do. So I think that that has a lot to do with it. What do you think, Mark?
I think it's a lot of identity. Yeah. I think some of that is, you know, me as a high schooler, well, I'm one of the punk or hard rock fans. Like, I can't like that. And so I actually, at least for then, that era, legitimately don't like it. But I don't know. There are weird things. My wife, hi, wife, you
my
might
wife.
Be listening. Wife doesn't like flat two. She
flat
doesn't like
two?
This lowered second scale degree in a key. Like, if there, I'm listening to
very distinct.
No, but this is
like,
this,
do you talk about that over dinner?
But
like,
no, this is not her saying this. She doesn't go around saying, I hate flat two. It's, she'll hear a song and she'll be like, oh, and I'm like,
interesting.
Huh. And then years of relationship later, I'm like, every time she does that is the flat two. She doesn't like the half step related to the root. And she doesn't know this. I discovered
earlier today.
But why?
I mean, yeah. How interesting. Because, like, yeah, I guess whenever I like songs, I'm learning in this process of learning from you that I do have just things that I naturally like. I just naturally like it. And every song that you play that suits that trope, I'm like, oh, I love this song. And others are, I don't like any of it.
I have a high school friend that really, the sound of Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers' voice just grates against her. So there's almost like nothing that can be done. It's just going to be painful. And so if there's just flat two all the time, my wife is just not going to be happy. So there's certain styles of music that maybe happen to just have some association with somebody that might not have anything to do with identity and culture. Is just this
hits
thing.
Hits your ear, like literally your cochlear nerves.
I don't know.
Or something.
So I think most of the, when it gets to hate, that's a cultural identity thing though.
Mm-hmm.
If you just chug and it's not your thing, that's one thing. But if you're like rallying against it, all the fourth grade boys in 1990 or whatever against New Kids on the Block, that's not because of an actual rational, me saying I hated New Kids on the Block when I was a third grader or whatever does not have anything to do with the sound of their music.
No, it was just everything jealousy, to do with being jealous
and what the expectations of me were. Right.
Yeah. You wanted your face on a big button. That's all.
That I don't know what you're talking about.
Ugh,
sorry,
guys. Mark, they had the big buttons, like the giant buttons
Did
that
they?
You put on your jacket.
Know.
Like giant.
I'm not from Boston.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, probably not. Okay. So, moving on. So Rocky Zimb, thank you. Rocky's been very active in the Discord. So thanks so much.
I think Rocky and I have a lot in common and we don't know it yet because I like troll his comment or his or their comments. I don't know your gender, Rocky. Sorry. And I think that we are similar. Can you DM me and let me know? Like, I'm watching you talk about shrinking and I'm like, oh, I think that you're like me. You know
so,
it.
Okay, Rocky says, I pulled one of the most interesting comments I wanted to talk about. They say, I find myself more listening to the music and not the lyrics of most songs. Same. I always misinterpret the songs or get the lyrics wrong, LOL. Like, Hey Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms. I thought it said, Hey Chelsea, LOL. My wife corrected me and I was so confused, LOL. So my question for you, this is called a Mondegreen.
Okay.
A Mondegreen, which is a misheard lyric. This is a whole thing in my band. There are certain lyrics that if I can't look at my bass player, hey, Brian, you're not mine, our bass player, Brian, I cannot look at him during certain lines because he will make me crack up because there's something hilarious he thinks I'm saying that I will accidentally like crack up and say
what
if I look
it?
At him.
What's the lyric?
Literally like every song has one.
Yeah.
And some of them are really stupid and I don't even want to dignify them. But like I'll just give you one example. There's one line, the dividing lines and furious cries will fade away.
Okay.
Ooh. He thinks I'm saying furious Christ. And he thinks that it's like a really awesome Christian metal band from the 90s. And it's just become this. So my question for you, like, Hey Chelsea, do you have any great Mondegreens, any good misheard lyrics in your brain?
I actually give this as an assignment. I wish I pulled up some of them to share, but that felt kind of weird to do. Where we talk about sensation and perception in Psych 101 and talk about like this same thing. Like, do you hear a song that it changed your interpretation of the song based on the lyrics? Always a lot of fun examples there. I always thought the Taylor Swift line, this is a common one, but about star-crossed lovers.
Mm,
I thought she was saying Starbucks lovers.
That's the one I was going to say. And it's not that. It's got a long list of ex-lovers.
Yeah, that's
but I literally teach that in my songwriting class of what not to do with text setting. Because the way she emphasized, got a long list of ex-lovers.
Yeah.
She's emphasizing the of, and it sounds like Starbucks lovers.
It does.
That's the best Mondegreen of all time.
I think it's like the most common one.
It's so stupid, but
it's so dumb, but like, yeah, it happens a lot and they're all funny. I wish I felt ethically okay to pull up some other examples for you, Rocky. But I can hit you up on Discord because I think we're best friends. So cool. So I'm gonna go to Davey Mack's question. I'm just curious about your theme song and the little stingers you have when you go to the ads. It sounds to me like a lot of 80s, 90s sitcoms. And I was wondering if that's what you're going for. That is 100% a question for Mark. They're from his mastermind. So Mark, was that your inspiration?
Also, Davey Mack, thanks for your participation on the Discord.
Oh,
a lot of good comments from you.
Great.
Well, there happens to be an episode coming soon that is me showing Nicole the theme music and the ad bumpers for the first time.
Right.
And we talked through all this, so I won't cannibalize so much. I was not specifically doing an homage to 80s and 90s sitcoms, but I will say that in my head, the idea of a music bumper between a commercial break is forever linked to sitcoms really in general, right? You've got the Seinfeld fading up and the boom,
yeah.
Or you've got the Simpsons fading out or in and it, you hear bum, 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 ba-da, and then nothing else. And a little jingle kind of happening in the seams. And that doesn't happen in golden age of TV, doesn't happen in Breaking Bad. It doesn't happen in streaming services. It's a product of that era. And there's nothing more locked to its era than wide appeal, mass appeal, kind of lowbrow sitcom. Mm. Like there's nothing more 80s than the Full House theme song.
Yeah.
There's nothing more 90s than like the Hanging with Mr. Cooper theme song, right? So I think there's just something about a 10-second music bumper created by a guy who was born in the 1980s that how could I do anything but create something?
We're all a product of our environment.
That sounded like that era. Now, specifically, some of them, we talk about this in the episode, some of them I am going for an 80s synth pop vibe or a 70s sort of thing like dance pop. So you're definitely right. But specifically, I think the association of the commercial bumper is just such an 80s and 90s thing because it doesn't exist anymore.
I never really heard it that way until I read this question. And, you know, we got this prep a couple days ago. We got it. I mean, Mark emailed it to me yesterday. But then today I was listening to our newest episode and I heard that and I heard it that way for the first time. And I never thought of it like that before. So thanks for your question.
It's really, really interesting. I'd never thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay, various people on Discord, including Rocky Zimb, Radioactive Richard, and Sub-Zero, were all talking about the new Linkin Park album from Zero and wanted to know if we were going to talk about it as an episode. And so, have you listened to this album?
No.
I did listen to the whole album not that long ago. This album notably is the first one to come out since Chester Bennington passed.
Oh.
And very notably, they've gone from male hard rock lead singer to female hard rock lead singer. The new vocalist, so Mike Shinoda, the rapper, all sings more now, so he's still in the band, but Emily Armstrong is their new singer, and so I was super curious just to see kind of what that would all sound like. So I came away having listened to this album, wanting to do a Linkin Park episode.
Okay. I'll
so
add
we
to
will do
list.
A Linkin Park episode next season.
That's cool.
It's probably not going to necessarily be about this album, but I was inspired by certain things I was thinking about this band when doing this. So hopefully that was your goal. But what I'll say about the album, I liked it. I heard it only one time through. I have to say, I haven't heard a Linkin Park record all the way through since Hybrid Theory, which is the one, you know, that the guy in the dorms kept playing, right? The old, old stuff. And this feels heavier than any of, like, I feel like my associations with Linkin Park over the last decade or so was more pop, honestly. Electronic, heavily electronic, radio pop. And there's some screaming, there's some heavy stuff in this. And I think it's good. I think it's really a heavy kind of hard rock record. It feels very nu metal. And I know you I have a mixed relationship with the new metal, to say the least. You may know, Nicole, listeners, you'll hear more about it. But this feels very early 2000s, late 90s, kind of. But I think there's some interesting stuff on it. I'm wondering how much of that is just, assuming I'm correct and it is heavier, how much of that is just the natural style and how much of that is they're going to see we have a female lead vocalist mm-hmm. and they're going to think we're like less intense now because people don't associate women with heavy metal. So let's dial it up to 12.
Or I think like maybe they knew that they couldn't replace their past lead singer. So they went a different direction just to have something so different that you couldn't compare
maybe,
it to
yeah.
as like an homage to him. Right.
Maybe. Yeah. I think it was nice to hear
yeah.
something that felt
I'm eager
like to
listen
me
to
kept
it.
I'd contrast.
Love to deep dive. Let's add it to the list for sure. The next question from Danny. Kind of mad at Danny. I'm a little bit mad at Danny here.
Oh,
and
boy.
You'll see why. I played a lot of Weird Al for them when they were a certain age, too. I'm sure talking about his kids. That made for really good car rides. I never worried too much about censoring stuff for them, for better or for worse. But I will say they all listen to good music now as teenagers and adults. LOL, no Swifties in my house. Mm. So I think that Danny's referencing our censorship when we talked about censorship and
Third Eye Blind episode.
Third Eye Blind episode. You know, I understand that there's stigma around Taylor Swift, but like objectively, it's good music, right? Like you cannot like her. I don't know. I was like, ooh, buddy. But I understand where you're coming from, Danny, but I that was a hit. That was a hit to read. And he backtracked. Sorry, should have refrained from specific examples. LOL, when this chat first started, a bunch of us were talking about how we used to be music snobs, but not anymore. It's made me realize that I still totally am. I'm just much better at keeping quiet when people talk about stuff I don't like.
The question from that, are you a music snob, Nicole?
I don't think I'm a music snob. I might be, though. You'd have to tell me. I mean, I'm not going to label myself as a snob because that's pejorative and I have a self-serving bias.
Right. I think I was a music snob. Mm. I think I'm not because I kind of like everything. I sort of deny the idea of certainly a style of music sucking. Mm. I deny that as possible, really, if it's something that people like.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so much value in so much stuff. That doesn't mean I have to like every song. Now, I'm like the musical intelligentsia and the music like talking head. Like, I can't say that I'm not a part of that, but as a snob, like, I don't know, I like a good pop banger.
You'll always listen to stuff, and that's something I've learned from this experience of working with you in this context, is that like you'll always give it a listen and you'll like put your all into listening to it. So we have a Grammy episode that we're putting out soon, and you know, when we're talking about the album of the year, Mark's like, oh, I'll listen to every album of the year, and I was like, oh, okay. Not me. I like skip around a Spotify playlist until I find something I like. So I think of the two of us, I'm probably more of a music snob than you. I mean, just think of that Jimmy Eat World song. I was pretty snobby about that.
You mean the noise?
That was hard to listen. That was a hard one for me to listen to. I was like, oh, I was like cranky that
day. But you came around to like acknowledging that it wasn't.
Because I wanted to hear it in context.
Right. Right. Sure. And okay. I learned something there.
So,
okay, yeah, so I'd like to think I'm not, but I think it has less to do with me trying to make myself feel better and more just like, look, I don't know. How many things that do I really like now that I blew off when I was 20 years old?
Right, like, well, how much time did I waste?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so this is our audio feedback. So there was an episode, a sidetrack, where I played my old band, Dream Hydra.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody. Some people said they liked it. I really appreciate that. And I shared it with the guys in the band, and one of them started texting me, and I'm like, whoa, 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 save it for the pod. And so this is Mark S.
We have Mark S.
We have Mark S, but Mark
Other
S did
Mark.
Not write in. Mark S phoned in.
From Dream Hydra.
Mark S, lead guitarist and one of the lead vocalists of Dream Hydra, left us a voicemail. I feel like I maybe might have to pause to give some context of what he's talking about, but he is responding up to just our reflections and my reflections
on
being in the band.
I'm mortified. I hope he likes me.
I loved the homage to Radiant you guys did in the recent podcast. To me, it was also about something unspoken, about what could have been. Before I get into that, briefly, and by briefly, I mean it will turn out not to be brief.
By the way, you can tell why I'm friends with him, right?
Briefly, 2 hours later.
The timeline was this. We recorded and created the album in 2013 and 2014. The video for In the Ether was created in October to coincide with the November 11th album release. But also around that time, Rory, our bassist, left the band. This was definitely unexpected. And the timing was nothing short of predominant. And then the album release slash video release happened. And shortly after, Pat, our drummer, told us he'd be moving to San Francisco to take a job up there. So any thoughts of gigging or touring were all of a sudden out of the question, at least until we replaced those guys. We auditioned a good handful of drummers and exactly one bassist. Brenton was his name, and he was awesome, and he agreed to come on board and play shows. And eventually we found our drummer as well, a cat named Luke, who was a pianist by trade but could hold down the drums with aplomb as well. So there were a couple other momentous events in the timeline that should be mentioned. In January, I lost my job. In March, I secured a new one that would necessitate a move down to Orange County from L.A., a couple hours drive away at most times of the day. And also in March, the birth of my twin boys. In May, I moved down to Orange County. So all of the Dream Hydra rehearsals and shows, from that point forward, I was now commuting a couple hours to get to. But then in June, Mark agreed to his new job and would end up moving in August. So the writing was on the wall, if you will, Dream Hydra pun. And we announced our last show at Molly Malone's, which took place on August 1st at 11 p.m. So getting back to what I felt was unspoken from your homage podcast. What if Rory had stayed and Pat had stayed? What if I didn't lose my job and take a new one 2 hours away? What if Mark didn't get a so-called, quote, job, end quote, outside of Boston at a college no one's ever heard of?
Oh.
If Dream Hydra had continued, what would album two have been? Imagine how our sound might have evolved. Maybe we would have tapped into more simple, emotional tunes like Numb across genres as we were wont to do. Maybe it would feature more of my Vedder-like vocals, which, as an aside, yes, that was obviously a huge influence on my voice. Even though I didn't mean to sound like him, especially in that, you know, clip that that Mark played for you, it's a beautiful emotional moment in that song. There's an emotional shift, and that guy's voice definitely comes through there. But it's something that I still kind of cringe when I hear, because I just didn't mean to sound like that, you know? But I digressed. Wait, one more digression within the aside. Itself already a digression. I don't know who Hozier is, and at this point it's too late for me to learn of them. I'm sorry to whoever they are, or is it whomever. Anyway, as you mentioned in your episode, Radiant was a kind of prove-it album. Mark, as a songwriter in our chosen format, and the three of us, Mark, Michael, and me, as producers of our recorded final product. But mostly, to be fair, it was about Mark. You know, what would he have written next for our band? Michael and I actually had already worked on a couple of songs together that could have been Dream Hydra'd into something cool and something next. And what would Brenton, our bassist, and Luke, our drummer, have brought in terms of influence and style and direction? So, I grieve the loss of our young band and what its ending meant to our lives. We called our reprieve an indefinite hiatus, maybe to avoid just calling it an ending. But our friendships and our connection, we of course still love each other, but we also didn't get to see our kids growing up. So I thought about all of this after your episode last week, and it took me a few days and a session with my therapist to kind of wrap my mind around what it meant and what was left unsaid.
I love Arthur Mark.
Luckily, I get sessions with my therapist every time I record a podcast.
Yeah, there's so much there. And just what a lovely reflection on like a really important like moment in time for all of your development, right? And I'm sorry I said that about your voice. I meant it as a compliment about Eddie Vedder. I think Eddie Vedder's great.
I think you liked his voice a lot.
I loved it. Yeah,
I think you did mean it as a compliment. And I might have said that he sounded, I mean, yeah.
So there's a lot of themes in this comment that I'd love to just pull out. And a lot of them have to do with Hozier.
Oh my, okay, I had a feeling.
But you said it around Hozier that, you know, it's too late now. But that's really what you're thinking about for this whole experience, that it's too late now, like that moment passed. But I'll challenge that, like, is it? You know, indefinite hiatus, that gives hope for, I don't know, I think you guys need to get on a Zoom call and just noodle around a little bit and like see what that is like.
We missed the 10-year anniversary, but there's always the 15th.
It's okay. There's always the 11th, right? Yeah. You can't put happiness on the other side of it. You can't say, oh, I'll be happy when. Just like be happy now. I think you guys owe it to yourselves to get together and just and talk about all this, right? This is a great, this podcast opened up some doors for you to have a conversation about like, what would it be like if we sat on Zoom and played instruments together? Like, what would that feel like? I also love how you change the verbiage. You made Dream Hydra a verb. And I think that we can be doing that more in our podcast. That what would you have Dream Hydra'd next?
So the joke, like, I would say I hydrated it is how I used to say it. So because I was the primary, I wrote most of the songs, but those guys did write songs too. Mm. And I would often arrange them though. So the term that I would use was hydrate it. That was the joke.
Gosh.
'Cause like,
that's cute.
I would take a song that Mark S wrote, but like add the kinds of vocal harmonies we did and add the weird guitar textures, like that stuff, especially when we did the album, we would put our sort of flavor on it, even if it started its life in some other form.
Yeah. I just think all we have in our lives is connection. That's the only thing we're taking with us everywhere we go, is our connection to others. And you guys have a really important, profound connection. And I'm hearing a lot of loss and grief in Mark S. And I'm sorry to get so counselor-y about it, but you know, you do have lost time that you can make up for. And just because you didn't see each other's kids grow up doesn't mean that you can't be part of their lives now, you know? So I don't know, feelings, but
totally agree.
I think it's important. So thanks for your call. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Mark S.
I see why you guys are friends.
Yeah, totally. There are a few things like I wanted to also comment on, like the whole question fundamentally of what would it have been like. Mm. I think part of the also longing, like you're hearing, I feel sad that I'm not in that band anymore and I miss those guys, but I also have a new band.
Yeah.
And I have musical outlets that not everybody in that group still has, right? Like everybody has their day jobs and my day job is music.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm in a new band and I still write music and
quote unquote.
Mark has been writing music and recording music, but that was new. And I think he hasn't been able in the decades since to keep his music, that part of his life is full.
Yeah.
So twins is real. I'll say that.
It's like the path we didn't take, like the road we didn't travel.
Right. So in terms of that second album, I think it's funny. He mentioned that he's reminding me that he and Michael started co-writing songs together. And there was a point when I said, you guys have to stop. You have to wait. You have to wait for me. Because, and I have kind of made similar threats sort of to my current band.
Yeah.
Because we self-record this album and then, okay, Mark, mix it.
Mm.
9 months later, I'm still mixing it. It's just so much work when I was working full time and things like that. And these guys are like writing the next albums of tracks. And I'm kind of like, it's not fair. Let me finish this project.
Yeah.
I'm in that zone with my current band, Slack Academics, right now. I'm finishing recording and mixing our album. And like, I have song ideas that pop in and I just go, shut up. Can't do it. I can't write because I know once I start writing it, I have to finish writing it. And I need to finish this project.
Well, that's
first.
Maybe how an artist like Taylor Swift does it, is she doesn't have any of that stuff. She just like sends voice memos to Jack and he just turns it into a hit.
Or like she can finish it. Whereas I'm like, no, I have to finish teaching this semester before I can work on this album again.
Sure.
And what would it have been like? I think the first Dream Hydra album, as I talked about in that video, was in that podcast, very much was in a wonderful way. A lot of kitchen sink. There was a lot there. And I think the second album, if we'd continued, would have had to have been simpler.
Yeah.
If only because we learned how hard it was with some random sound guy at a club to make us sound good on stage. Maybe we need to not be as proggy. Maybe just write bangers that are like better in a live context. Like, I just think we probably would have simplified in ways that my band now has.
Sure.
Just because we got it out of our system, maybe.
Yeah.
A couple more on the Discord from Athena Agileia. She's talking about The Killers. They're talking about The Killers, the band. The chokehold they had on me around 2018 to 2012 was real. So many spots on all my custom burned CDs were for them, which I feel like custom CDs back in the day were the equivalent of that Seinfeld episode about speed dial positions. Which song or band was the number one on your custom CDs?
So mixtape. Number mixtape one position question. On mixtapes.
Yeah.
I don't have... Wow. I grew up in a time that we would make our mix cassette tapes by recording songs off the radio.
100%.
So it would have to be like whatever was the first on the radio that I would catch for the song. You couldn't like reorder them, but once you could start reordering them for burned CDs, I think a number one position, I mean, High Fidelity talks about this, but you have to bring them in. You have to like, you can't come on too strong. You have to like ease into it. So I'd prefer like something mid-tempo, like that just sets the tone, the emotional tone of what the CD is going to be. And then we can build up from there.
So not necessarily a specific song, but you're going for the... Yeah, I feel like I would tend to go with a fast, fun song.
Just to like
as the beginning.
Pump it up.
I think The Killers could be like 28 to 2012, I was no longer making mixtapes. but like your Mr. Brightside or your When You Were Young, that's a good mixtape opener. There's something about that... that guitar thing that starts the beginning of When You Were Young, that would work. My Day, probably like a Green Day, like that sort of a pop punk fast. I can see what you're saying about not starting with the outright
intensity. I want to like make an arc and like build up.
Yeah.
But I do think like setting the emotional tone is important, or if it was like a mixtape for someone to say what you really want to say in that first song to like get the message across, because that was like what we would do. Right.
So the thing is, I would say there's three types of mixtapes. There's the recorded off the radio thing that I was doing when I was a fourth grader or whatever, or fourth through eighth. Which it is what it is the first song. The second type of mixtape is the, oh my God, band members, you all have to hear this band. Here's their favorite. And it's just sort of, it's literally in that case, probably the order of release of the song.
Sure.
Like it's not, there's no journey there except I need you to hear this music for your own education. And then there's the most meaningful type probably in my life, which is the like girlfriend mixtape.
Oh yeah.
Which that's the real mixtape that I would craft. And
right.
that one's not necessarily starting with your fast Green Day. That's starting with like the, this is our song kind of thing.
Except
right.
The tone of this is why you love me.
That's right. That's right. So,
for sure. Great question.
Okay, our last, we got double emails.
From Marilyn.
Why don't you read the first one? From Marilyn R. Pukila, Marilyn Lorehound, the resident Tolkien scholar of the Lorehounds.
And this is more just a comment and an editorial, and I appreciate that. Mainly because she begins, Nicole, I am so with you. I couldn't tell you how many times I've explained to people that being an introvert is about and where you get your energy from, not what you do with it. Like you, I have lectured many times in front of many classes. I'm now talking on podcasts and a whole lot of things that make people, that people might tag me as an extrovert. But when it's time to go home, I go home. And I rarely invite people to come with me, if ever. At the same time, I loved giving hot fudge potlucks for my students when I was teaching. But silence, contemplation, and walks free from any devices are all important parts of my life. I agree with you, Marilyn. There's lots we can talk about here. I want to know everything about what a hot fudge potluck is.
It's a potluck, which implies multiple people are bringing different kinds. It's like a chili cook-off with hot fudge.
But how many varieties of hot fudge
are
there?
But it's a potluck, right? People have to bring more than... It's not just her bringing the hot fudge. It's a potluck, right?
Yeah. I'm fascinated.
Is it all? Yeah. We need more information.
But, she continues, I've noticed that the MBTI, which is the Myers-Briggs personality type inventory, adjacent personality tests that come in so many forms, tend to produce different results for me depending on the environment and the way the forms of the questions reflect it. Hmm. So on work-related MBTIs, I almost always score extrovert. On counselor administrative tests, I always score introvert. The answers are different depending on my context, aren't they always? Yes. Even in my near complete ignorance of popular music of the period, the period that you're covering, I know classical music, having played and sung and listened to it for most of my life. I still enjoy the episodes because of the many things I learn, and I love to see how you weave together your two expertises. Rock on. I think that's a really important note about personality inventories is your questions, your answers do change over time depending on context.
Totally.
Depending on the way the wind blows, I could be an introvert or an extrovert or judging or perceiving or perceptive or conscientious. It really depends on how the questions are asked and how you're primed that specific day. So it's definitely not a true science.
I've also gone through phases in my degree of appreciation or resistance to personality tests and am I eager to learn from this or am I actually screw these things, right?
Yeah.
And
they're pretty biased.
I've taken enough of them that I can kind of see where they're going with a given question. And it's like, do I want this test to be accurate or do I want to screw the test up is kind of like another thing.
Yeah. Or do I want to like get the job? Do I know that this job wants me to be an extrovert? So yeah. I'll answer as an extrovert word. They're really face valid. That's the term.
Interesting. What does
face
that mean?
Face validity. That means like you can tell what the test wants you to answer to have a certain result.
I think sometimes it's really clear.
Yeah. Often.
I'll say that the Discord was popping off about the introversion episode. Yeah. That's our Depeche Mode episode. Mm-hmm. They were talking about introversion, extroversion.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you got to get on that Discord. There's lots of cool conversations that happen and it's neat because it's a way to interface in real time. Just really.
Sure. Instead of having to wait 2 months for us to answer your email.
I usually interface after I drink a bottle of wine and it's like 2 a.m. and I can't sleep. So if you're interested in that type of content of me just popping off.
So we're lucky the Hozier bashing didn't happen on Discord. Okay, so Marilyn writes one more message later and this will be our last piece of feedback. And this one's more of a specific question. So let's see if we still got the brainwaves for it. Hello, Mark and Nicole. This is a question that has puzzled me for many years. Why is it that some classical pieces are better known than others? Why is it that the top three violin concertos are the Mendelssohn, the Tchaikovsky, and the Brahms, to which I would add the Sibelius, but then this is a part of my genetic proclivity anyway. I think Marilyn's Finnish. Thus ignoring the Bruckner, she means, or the Dvorak. Or, to use probably the best note example of all, why Mozart and not Salieri? Do you know the reference there? Have you seen Amadeus?
No.
In Amadeus, it's like the story of Mozart. The movie, you should check it out. 1982, okay. Great movie. Salieri is this other composer that like wishes he were Mozart. And like nobody knows who he is in real life, but he like, why wasn't he the Mozart, right?
Yeah, I know that general vibe, yeah.
So he's sort of the bad guy, sort of. At present, I must set aside the writings of composers of color or women composers because, alas, the reasons of their lesser known circumstances are only too clearly due to bias unrelated to musicality, which would automatically hamper their abilities to be heard in their own time. But for all the white male composers, was it better patronage or promotion and performance or financial new? Or is there something in the style or musicality or tonality of the best known composers that has psychological origins? It seems to me that you two, or you two, as my dictation bot interpreted my voice, you two being the Irish band, are the perfect duo to explore these questions. Even if it isn't concerned with contemporary popular music, perhaps you could still apply your skills to consider this at some point. After all, each composer was part of the popular music of their own day. I will be all ears. All the best, Marilyn. Okay. That's a good and real question.
I have no clue.
We're
going to
end on this because it's like a real, real answer. You have no clue on this, I think?
I mean, I think that just like, why is it?
There's a human nature answer to this.
There's a human nature answer to it, right? You go with the crowd, right? Like, and we talk about this on other episodes too, this idea that, you know, maybe Salieri was good, but all your neighbors were listening to Mozart and you wanted to be part of the in group. And eventually that swell just crests. That like it only includes Mozart, right? And you don't look at their competitors. I'm not sure of the music machine of this time and place. Like, was there a machine behind Mozart, like promoting him and breaking down Salieri? I'll have to watch Amadeus, I guess, to figure out the perspective. But that's what I would most likely guess is just access to hear the person's music and then to see what the group think asserts, what like the crowd asserts.
Interesting. Yeah. So I'm not a musicologist, first of all. I'm not a music historian. So my perspective is only my own, my limited perspective. But I have some thoughts about this. I think you're really onto something, though, Nicole. I should say, Marilyn, you say each composer was a part of the popular music of their own day. And I want to push back upon that because people say that sometimes. I'll hear someone say like, oh, well, like Beethoven was the pop of his day. No, he was not. That is still learned, academic, so to speak, high class, high society music.
Right. Wouldn't like minstrels be or like people like buskers on the street or something?
So the truth is popular music as if we look at sort of if we talk like music appreciation class, music 101 sort of class, you talk about three kinds of music in the most broad sense. There's what we could call folk music.
Okay.
We could call art music and we can call something popular music. And that's an oversimplification, but folk music is traditional music done unprofessionally, usually cooked into societal functions in general, right? Folk songs, you don't go to a folk concert in the same way that you would go to a concert. You're making folk music with your people in its traditional sense. Now, Bob Dylan is a folk artist, but that's like folk with a capital F. That is a form of popular music, not an actual form of folk music. Some religious music could be folk music. Some, you know, nursery rhymes, folk music, right? It's like the music of the people, so to speak, right? Not performed or even written by professionals, not even necessarily written by any one person. Traditionally, folk music, right? Art music is the music of the people educated in music and thus also sort of consumed by the educated, right? Art music is music not created to necessarily make a buck. Or for even, it's even necessarily entertainment as much as for artistic expression, right? At least in theory. There's a lot of blur here.
Yeah.
But at least in spirit, we think of classical music as art music. We think of, you know, Indian classical music would be art music. Certain forms of jazz, I think, have become art music. Certain prog rock or whatever has crossed into almost being art music. Experimental music. Where the purpose of it is the expression of the art more than it is to make a buck.
Maybe like Andre 3000's new album that's nominated for Grammy of the Record of the Year.
Stay tuned for that episode.
Album of the Year, whatever.
We got to talk about that. We got to do a Grammy episode
that's
coming
like
up.
That's like art music.
Probably more than it is.
Right.
Because the third pillar is popular music, right?
Okay.
And nothing is perfect example of any of this. But popular music exists for mass appeal and for sort of financial endeavors. Now, that is an extremely cynical way to look at it.
What's the truth?
Because art music is made by professionals too. And yes, there's money to be made, but like, it's like, what is the purpose of it? So
right.
I say this as a starving artist who has spent a lot more money on my own music than I've ever made on my, when I'm talking about like my rock bands and stuff, I spent more on the guitar than I made at the gig, you know? So it's not that the music itself makes money. It's that it is designed for mass appeal.
I understand.
So this is, I am not a musicologist. I do not teach music appreciation. But when we talk about these chunks of music with tons of blur in between and there's Venn diagrams there, Mozart is not popular music. And the idea that popular music is a mid-stage capitalism thing. Popular music does not exist in Mozart's day.
Sure.
There was popular stuff with a lowercase p.
Sure.
And yeah, it would be more the guy on the street, the busker, or the person playing the lute or the proto guitar and the fiddle tune in the bar. And yes, Mozart was way more popular. The sort of classical era art music was way more popular amongst, like you would go and people would throw tomatoes if the performance was not good. It was rowdy. It was more of a social event. But it wasn't a direct analog to Taylor Swift because there was no direct analog to Taylor Swift.
Right, that's understood. And I think that there's kind of a caste system when we talk about different levels of music, and it's a very class-based.
Sure. And it was maybe less so then, but is absolutely now.
Were Mozart and Salieri in the same class?
Yes. So why Mozart and Salieri? To the actual question, I think you were right on to say, like, it's based on who you know and keeping up with the Joneses and stuff.
Right.
Because you mentioned Marilyn, and thank you for the question. This is a good one. You mentioned Mendelssohn. Felix Mendelssohn is the main reason why we all know about Bach.
Mm.
So like Bach, you know, people say the three B's. She mentions the top three violin concertos, but the three B's of kind of classical music is one Baroque composer, Bach,
mm-hmm.
one borderline classical early romantic composer, Beethoven, and then one romantic composer, Brahms. They're the three B's, some of the biggest heavy hitters. Why do we know Bach? Because this guy in the 1800s, Mendelssohn, found a bunch of Bach and realized this guy's good and started like sharing Bach and collecting all the works of Bach and making sure everybody heard Bach all the time.
Right.
Before that, Bach was like old grandpa music. Nobody really cared about him. Mm. He had fallen way out of popularity. He was well known in his day, roughly. But in the Baroque era, they were more like craftsmen. They were more like, they weren't superstars yet. Bach just kind of fell out of fashion. Nobody cares. And then Mendelssohn decides he's cool.
Yeah.
And for the last pushing 200 years now, Bach is one of the heavy hitters.
Dude, it's all about the producers. It's all about people like producing and promoting the
music.
It's
not the producer. It's like the influencer.
Yeah.
Mendelssohn would have been an influencer. And he was relatively successful in his day, more so than, for example, to echo on another thing she said, like his sister, Fanny Mendelssohn, really good composer, nowhere near the notoriety or fame of her brother. Big surprise, unfortunately. But somebody decided Mozart was better. And Mozart's this weird genius or whatever, and he probably was better than Salieri. But ultimately, we know Mozart because everybody back then said he was better.
Yeah.
And think, this is why I roll my eyes so hard when you look on like a YouTube video of like Queen and someone's like, music's not like this anymore. And then you go to a music video. This is a YouTube comment. You go to a YouTube video of Sabrina Carpenter and people are like, this is not as good as Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, of course.
And the thing is, like,
it's different.
It doesn't matter that it's different. Fleetwood Mac and Queen are in the top 10 of artists from the 1970s.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Sabrina Carpenter like that. She won't be. But like all the music that we're hearing on a daily basis is everything that exists in 2024. Or 2025, which when this episode will come out.
Yeah.
And what do we get from the 1700s? Like five guys.
Right.
They have already done the curating.
Yeah.
All the crap from the classical era has been forgotten.
Or like, is it crap? Like, we'll never know.
Some of it might have been great, but we'll never know.
Really, we have great.
So I guess I can make you feel better. Like, there is no rhyme and reason, Marilyn, unfortunately. Some of these people were chosen because of influencers. Some of it was because they were truly great, but I think there's just too much content. Somebody has to get forgotten.
Yeah.
And so, because as much as I might roll my eyes to see, oh my gosh, they're doing Magic Flute again. Why don't we do a new opera instead at the opera house, right? Sure. But also, there's so much music. How could you ever know it all anyways?
Right.
So I'm sure a musicologist would have an actual answer as to the why. I think it's because the people that were good in a way that resonated with the generation after them.
That's fair.
Generation or almost maybe 75 years. Mendelssohn, there was the fact that Mendelssohn made Bach popular in the mid 1800s says more about the mid 1800s than it says about Bach.
Right.
The fact that we like which 70s hip hop people remember now says more about what we like or what the curators liked, which is to say the people from the 80s and early 90s, when they were teaching us hip hop,
right,
which 70s hip hop did they like? That's what determined what was good.
So you're talking about like media gatekeeping, essentially.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But some of it is, it's not negative necessarily.
No, it's just the
is,
way of the
but
world.
It's like, I think what we think of Mozart was informed by probably some guy or guys in the early 20th century writing literal books about it.
Imagine.
So
if you're a musicologist and you know about this Mozart and Salieri situation,
What's the real answer?
What's the real answer? Yeah. Drop us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Let us know. Hit us up on Discord.
Yeah.
Fun
Send
mailbag.
In your feedback,
yeah.
Everybody. This has been fun. We'll do this again.
It has been fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do more. I'm so excited. If you have ideas for next season, hit us up. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vatcher and me, Mark Papany. I also produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
And let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we answer all your burning questions, so please send them in. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.